Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review was heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on current events when we come back. You know, the income tax and Social Security programs are not compatible with our traditional American values, and that's because these two programs encompass the second and the eighth planks to the Communist Manifesto. It's a foreign and alien ideology. Traditional American values are individual responsibility in place of Social Security and tithing in place of the income tax. Now, these foreign and alien ideologies require of us that we violate three of the Ten Commandments and eight statutes of the Old Covenant. We covet our neighbor's property, and then we call that income redistribution. We steal from our neighbors with unjust weights and measures called Federal Reserve notes. And we practice idolatry by signing contracts with our foreign and alien gods called government. And we're not getting away with our crimes either. We're now paying up to 75% of everything we create and produce in taxes, and we live in mortgaged homes owned by the savings and loan companies. We drive cars that are owned by GMAC or Ford Motor Finance. And the average family of four in America has an average $70,000 consumer debt. We owe nearly $9 trillion in our national debt, and we're surety for another $54 trillion of unfunded government obligations. And our financial institutions are leveraged out to $100 or $200 or $300 trillion worldwide, take your pick. Our Social Security retirement system is a chain letter Ponzi scheme, and then you and I live from paycheck to paycheck, and we're taught to call all of this prosperity. Well, the God of Israel gave us a better way of life than that, and our founding fathers followed that better way in our Constitution. Now, if you'd like to learn more about tax and status and a better way of life, why don't you call and ask for our free four-hour compact disc package. It's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative, and best of all, it's free, and you can call right now. The number is 417-273-4967 to order that free general law CD package. Again, that's 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Just click on to the email and then send us an email request. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. In the series on current events, there's another source of information that I value very highly, and it's called the Acres USA newspaper. The Echo Update is the section that I wanted to cover today. Acres, the voice of Echo Agriculture here in the United States. If you want to order a copy or a subscription, I guess you could order either a copy if you want to test it, or a subscription. You go to Acres USA, published by Charles Walters. He's the executive editor. It's old Charlie. And they're down in Austin, Texas. Requests for permission to reprint must be in writing to Acres USA. And this is copyrighted, and their address, see if I can find you an address and a phone number here. P.O. Box 91-299, Austin, Texas. The zip code is 78709-1299. I've got a fax number here. They got a phone number. Let me flip over a page or two here and see if I can find your phone number. I don't see one right there. If you want a phone number, just go to the operator and tell them you want Acres USA in Austin, Texas, and I think they can do that for you. Their name again, Acres, A-C-R-E-S, USA, P.O. Box 91-299, Austin, Texas. Last time I saw a number here, they wanted, here it is, $27 a year. $27 a year, 12 issues published monthly. U.S. funds only. Single copies are $5. So if you just want a single copy to test it, send them a $5 bill and see what that brings you. All right, we got the section here, which is called the Echo Update. That's what I like to have, is the Echo Update. A judge halts the GMO test. In a federal court, the discussion that will have long-range repercussions. Judge Harold Kennedy has ruled in Washington, D.C. that the U.S. Department of Agriculture must halt all field trials of genetically engineered crops until more rigorous environmental reviews have been conducted. At issue were genetically mutilated varieties of creeping bentgrass and Kentucky bluegrass, which were discovered to have contaminated native grasses miles away, including a national grassland. This brings to a screeching halt, at least for now, Monsanto's campaign to promote massive-scale planting of Roundup-ready biotech grass, which would have dramatically increased the amount of herbicides used at schools and on lawns, sports fields, and golf courses. I'm one of those that's concerned about this biotechnology, and this is good news, I think, for all of us. The GMO problem that I see here from the countryside, just from my particular point of view, is that my neighbor down the street, he believes in biotechnology. And I'm not opposed to that. I mean, hell, if he wants to do that, let him get after it. If that's his mistake, let him pay the price. The problem that is enveloping all of us is, and as this judge here, I think, correctly identified the problem, you get down the street and you plant your Kentucky bluegrass with this GMO variety, and the bees that are pollinating take that GMO pollen down the street to my grass, and then you have infected my grass with your pollen, and you've brought your GMO over to my side of the fence. And if it turns out to be a bad program, it's kind of like thalidomide. You know, it sounds good, you know, when they come out with the product and they're out promoting it and selling it, and they show you springtime, and here's this woman, she's swinging in the swing, and here's this guy, he's pushing her, and they're both smoking a Salem cigarette, and everything is just honky-dory, until one day somebody wakes up and says, did you know that smoking causes cancer? And then all of a sudden you don't see the ads anymore, you know, of the Salem cigarettes. And then you get warning labels on the package. And then you get these warnings, you know, from the American Cancer Society that smoking causes cancer. And all of a sudden we all wake up to reality. That's what happened with thalidomide. You know, they came out with this tranquilizer kind of drug, made everybody feel real good. And then they found out, oh, my God, it creates birth defects, you know, in pregnant women. And then all of a sudden it was something different. So the halting of GMO tests is nothing but good news. Now, here's another one. God's own alfalfa wins around. Hard on the heels of the Washington, D.C. decision, Judge Charles Breyer in California ruled that the U.S. Department of Agriculture failed to abide by federal environment laws when it approved a GE crop. It's alfalfa this time. Now, 75% of U.S. alfalfa exports go to Japan, which has warned, along with South Korea, that they will discontinue importing if GE alfalfa is grown in this country. Alfalfa is also the third most valuable and fourth most widely grown crop in the United States. But international ramifications were only part of the judge's ruling. For those farmers who choose to grow non-genetically engineered alfalfa, the possibility that their crops will be infected with the engineered gene is tantamount to the elimination of all alfalfa. So he called the USDA's approval of genetically engineered alfalfa a threat to farmers' livelihoods and a risk to the environment. Bill Wenzel of the National Family Farm Coalition praised the court's decision, and it's unfortunate that we have to turn to judges to do what's right for farmers while the USDA carries water for the biotech companies. That was added by Pat Trask. He's a South Dakota alfalfa grower and seed man. It's a great day for God's own alfalfa. I got to tell you that as an organic farmer here myself, that we use alfalfa. I used to use corn. I had to stop buying corn altogether. And the reason for that is that about 60% of the total corn crop in the United States is now GMO. And while we don't grow corn down here in my corner of Missouri, we grow a lot of corn here in Missouri. And when I go to buy a feed for my cattle, we like to buy feed that has mix of wheat and corn and various other feeds in it, and it's called dairy feed. So some years back, they started putting in what they call bypass protein. And there was a particular product called range cubes, and boy, the cows would really milk on range cubes. And the problem is that they're taking the offal from the meatpacking plants, that's animal waste, drying it out, and then feeding it back to the cows, making the cows cannibals. Then we found out after we did that, you know, for a few years, that causes mad cow disease. So we stopped doing it. Now we don't feed cattle offal to cattle. We feed the cattle offal to the pigs. And then we feed the pig offal to the cows. And that way, we're assured that we're safe from mad cow disease because we're not feeding the cattle offal to the cattle. It's the pig offal that we're feeding to the cattle, and that's scientifically all right. Well, boys and girls, I think that that's a sleight of hand, and it has nothing to do with reality. And so I had to stop buying the range cubes, and so then I relied upon corn, and then they GMO'd the corn, and now you can't buy corn at your local feed store with any guarantee that the corn that you're buying is not GMO. So now I'm down to alfalfa. Now I got word that they're going to GMO the alfalfa, which then poses a problem. Well, what are you going to feed your livestock? And so this to me is good news. Now to the average guy in the city who doesn't care, tuck this away in your heart. What we're feeding the cattle out here on the farm is what you're eating when you eat the meat and drink the milk. And if it's bad food, then you're eating and drinking bad food, which is going to come down on you like thalidomide or like some other degenerative disease, one day you wake up and you've got a hard lump in your breast, ladies, or some guy finds out he's got colon cancer, and then we all sit there and go, oh, oh my God, he's got cancer, and we don't know why. Well, now you know. Dairy processor goes BST-free. Now, this BST is an additive that we put into the dairy feed to our cows so that the cows give more milk. Another invention by our good friends at Monsanto. California Dairies, the state's largest dairy cooperative, a third of whose 660 members inject their cows with bovine somatropin, is called hormone-free, or is going rather hormone-free by August of 2007 due to increasing requests by buyers. Notice the by buyers. You consumers out there are saying, we don't want to buy that crap. So now the California Dairies, now you can rest assured that if there wasn't pressure by consumers, that is, if consumers would continue to buy the milk and shut their mouths, we would continue to put the chemicals in it. Fortunately, there's enough consumers out there saying, we're not going to buy your milk unless you can guarantee that it's BST-free. So here's one dairy cooperative with 660 members that have now gone to their members and said, we can't sell this crap any longer to the public, so what we'll have to do is to stop using the BST. In fact, it's on its way out here in the United States. It won't be long until all of the dairies in the country will just stop using it because it's economically unfeasible. But meanwhile, back on the farm, it's still being used at least by one-third of the dairymen, which you got to keep in mind that they take that one-third of the contaminated milk, mix it with all of the uncontaminated milk, and even though two-thirds of it is BST-free, it's all mixed together. So you're going to get it whether you like it or not. That's what the bottom line is. Now, the co-op's chief, Gary Korsmeyer, said that the new milk will be placed between traditional and organic in the market. The interest in organic milk also played a part, though it's not that readily available, according to Korsmeyer. And besides, we certainly do not take a position that organic is superior in any way. All right, so let's underline, we do not take the position. Now, this is the dairy buying the milk and then bottling it and sending it to you. Because most of the milk that you're buying is chemical trash to start with, and so they don't want to take the position that organic is superior. And so he goes on, he says, now the co-op will continue to market hormonized, now that's not homogenized, it's hormonized milk, although it will be processed in separate facilities at extra cost. So it's going to cost them more for the hormones, and that's why I say ultimately it'll just be phased out. Honeybees are in danger. You might have seen this in the news. Honeybees, for some reason, are just dying, and we don't know why. Now this poses some very severe problems. Not only have we had drought here in the United States and the western states over the past 10 years, reminiscent now of the 1930s, but in addition to that, we now have honeybees dying. We're having some problems with our agriculture here in the United States because the price of corn has doubled over the past year. Doubled. Which means then that those of us that are still using corn, I'm not using it anymore, but those of us in the agriculture business still using corn, now have to pay twice as much to buy the corn. So it won't be long until meat prices will spike and other products that use corn will spike. And so down in Mexico, where people eat a lot of corn, the price of tortillas has gone up dramatically, and this is the main staple diet of the poor in South America, Mexico, I guess, in particular. And so as a result of that, there's been some repercussions. Well, you can get ready for this. I just saw a piece the other day come across my desk from an economics writer. He said, you can expect food prices. Now, note this down. Let's see if it actually happens. He said, you can expect food prices in the United States to double over the next 12 months. And boys and girls, if that happens, there's going to be weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth, because I doubt seriously that your wages are going to double over the next 12 months. This would be bad news if the price of food were going to double over the next 2 years, 3 years, or 4 years, but he said 12 months. And that's because of the move or the push toward ethanol production, that is, this biofuel to take the place of gasoline. And I suspect, because of Revelation chapter 6, talking about famine coming upon the world, that ethanol, in reality, is going to exacerbate that prophecy. Let's see if that comes to pass. Now, meanwhile, back on the farm, about one-third of the crops that we grow here in the United States are dependent upon honeybees. Honeybees, just that average little old critter that runs around from blossom to blossom, moving the pollen, you know, from one flower to another flower around the bee. You'll probably see them out there in your yard. The average guy doesn't care much about bees one way or the other, but out here in the agricultural world, we depend upon these bees to pollinate our crops. In fact, in California, where they grow most of the almonds in the world, I think California grows 80% of the world's almonds, they absolutely depend upon honeybees and trucking honeybees in from places like North and South Dakota, clear to California and Montana and Idaho and other states to pollinate those crops. Well, the honeybees are dying off. There's a mysterious malady. Now, I want to point out to you, boys and girls, that this is a real kick in the pants now to agriculture, and it'll be a real kick in the pants to the prices that you're going to be paying for these products that are grown by honeybees or are pollinated by honeybees. Now, honeybee colonies usually have about 20,000 to 60,000 bees. You know, in the wintertime, they drop down to about 20. In the summertime, they go up to 60. Reports from at least 22 states relate that some beekeepers have lost up to half of their colonies due to some mysterious illness. It's now called colony collapse disorder. The wild honeybee population has already been devastated in recent years by the tiny parasitic Varroa mite, which has also destroyed many domestic colonies. Now, beekeepers have problems just like any other farmer has problems with his livestock or with his crops out in the field or with the weather. And mites and mice and other predators are a problem. This is a brand new problem we've never seen before. He goes on to say, one unusual effect of this current plague is the fact that few dead bees are ever found littered around a hive. The bees simply disappear. I'm going to point out something here. The bees are simply disappearing. All right, now, I'm an old-timey beekeeper, and I want to tell you that when we get mites in the hive or we get mice get into a hive, the outside of the hive or hives will have dead honeybees all around it. So when we come into the bee yard, we see all these dead bees, and we say, listen, that hive over there is in trouble. Let's go open it up first. You can see the problem. In this case, they just disappear. Now, have you noticed the monarch butterflies are killed by these GMO crops? In other words, in the areas where we've been growing GMO corn, the monarch butterflies just disappeared. Now, the butterflies are also pollinators. And because of Monsanto and GMOs, we have now virtually eliminated monarch butterflies. I've never heard anybody concerned about monarch butterflies. We're concerned about eagles, and we're concerned about other species that are disappearing or are threatened with extinction. But I haven't heard anybody get very excited here about monarch butterflies disappearing. And the monarch butterflies, insofar as you and I are concerned, boys and girls, are a whole lot more important to us and our lives than are many of these species that are disappearing or are threatened with extinction like bald eagles. You know, you and I can live forever without bald eagles. We've been living our lives without passenger pigeons, haven't we? Now, I'm not suggesting that the loss of passenger pigeons isn't serious or that it isn't deplorable, but I'm pointing out to you that we can live a long time without passenger pigeons, but I suspect that we're going to have a greater impact upon your life and my life with the loss of monarch butterflies and honeybees than with the loss of lions and tigers and zebras and hippopotami. All right, so just tuck that one away in your heart, because Bible prophecy talks about the Great Tribulation and a period of time when we're going to have a plague that is going to bring about famine and disease that will destroy one-fourth of all the people that are alive on planet Earth and do it in short order. Now, there's about 6 billion people in the world, and when the world's human population collapses by 25%, I submit to you that that's going to be more severe. It's going to impact upon you to a greater degree than the loss of eagles or lions or tigers, you know, as deplorable as that may sound. So the honeybee problem, the New York Times reported in February that one California beekeeper suddenly discovered half of his 100 million bees missing. When affected bees have been found and analyzed, they reveal weakened immune systems and an alarming number of foreign bacteria and other organisms. Loss of honey is not the only concern. The National Research Council reminds us that in order to bear fruit, three-fourths of all flowering plants, which includes food crops, rely on pollinators for fertilization. Researchers are busily trying to find answers. Now, take a look here. Three-fourths, that's 75% of all flowering plants. That's pretty serious. Now, remember I said that about a third of our food crops, you know, things like almonds, that's a flowering plant. But also there are other flowering plants that are not necessarily food crops that depend upon bees to pollinate. That's your flowers. Now, boys and girls, to say that this is serious is kind of an understatement. If there's a collapse in the bee population, it isn't honey. You can forget about honey. Americans consume about 0.5% of their sugar supply. 0.5% of your sugar comes from honey. You depend upon CNH, pure cane sugar from Hawaii, the Philippines, and Indonesia. You're not concerned about a shortage of honey. That's irrelevant. But boys and girls, if 1/3 of our food crops are dependent upon honeybees for their pollination, you can expect higher food prices. And in preparation of a famine, the first thing that happens is there are droughts and then shortages of food, which then imposes rationing, which then predates or precedes the famine. You won't be concerned about almonds. You'll be concerned about, do I have enough gruel to put in my stomach? And then, of course, when the gruel runs out, when it's costing you $30 a pound to buy wheat so that you can make gruel, now that's going to get to be real serious. And I want to point out to you that in the news media, they say, well, it's honeybees, well, it's drought, and well, it's just the throw of the dice. I want to point out to you it's God Almighty himself. And he's told us in a number of places in the scripture, he said, you know, if you want to know who's doing this to you, terrorists like to send a letter to the police and say, well, we're the ones that set off that bomb. And they get a little bit of respect. It seems like here our Creator doesn't get any respect. So I thought I'd point that out. That's Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28 combined with Matthew 24 and Revelation 6. Now pay attention. Honeybees are in danger. Now, have you heard about the ID chips? I'm talking about putting ID chips in. You know, this is Orwellian in nature. But it's a little more than that. The ID chips also have some health problems that have now come up because more and more people are putting these ID chips into their children. At the National ID Expo in Kansas City, someone asked, what safety studies have been conducted on the chips that are inserted into animals? Total silence ensued. Has anybody ever asked, what safety studies have been conducted on these biochips that are being inserted into animals and now into people? Well, no one knew. Or if they knew, no one was willing to admit that research had already confirmed that implanted microchips create cancer tumors. All right, tuck that one away in your hearts now. Well, it makes all the sense in the world. You know, anytime that you put a foreign body or foreign object into your body, you know, it's attacked by your white blood cells. Now take a look at a splinter. You know, you're out here working away and you get a splinter in your finger, and the next thing you know, you've got this festering sore over here with a little pain. Pretty soon you squeeze it and it pops out, and here comes that splinter. Well, that's the foreign body. Has anybody ever thought that if you stuck a microchip in there, it might do the same thing? I don't know. It never crossed my mind until I read this in Acres, which is another little reason why I like the Acres and especially the Echo Update, because it's filled with about, oh, I don't know, 30, maybe 40 of these little short blurbs of current event news that you don't get on Katie Couric. Now, think about it. I never heard anything on Main Street News about a judge halting GMO test, or that the alfalfa experiments have been sidelined, or that a dairy processor is going BST-free, or honeybees in danger. I'll take that back. There was in the mainstream press some information here about honeybees. The ID chips and tumors? No. I never heard anything about that. In fact, they're promoting it. And when you get the mainstream press on the bandwagon promoting some government product or process, they never tell you what the side effects are, what the downside is. They don't give you both sides of the story. They just give you one side, which is another good reason why I subscribe to Acres USA and the current events that come from it. Not necessarily, you know, today's latest breaking news, honeybees dying worldwide or something like that, but instead, we get an update as to what's going on around the world in farming, which impacts upon all of us, whether you live in the city or out here on the farm. If you're a city dweller, let me tell you, boys and girls, when food prices double, whether it's over 1 year, 2 years, or 3 years, hell, if it doubled over the next 5 years, it's going to impact upon you very severely. And then one economist is saying he expects food prices to double over the next year because of ethanol alone. Just ethanol is going to do it. I said, oh, my God. If that's the case, boy, there's going to be some real repercussions here. Now, they go on to say, talking about ID chips and tumors here, that researchers at the Hanover Medical School in Germany implanted microchips subcutaneously in 4,279 mice of two generations. And after a normal lifespan, malignant tumorous nodules, had surrounded the microchip in 36 of the mice. Now, the National Veterinarian School in Nantes, France, reported the discovery of 52 subcutaneous tumors associated with microchips in three different carcinogenic mice studies. Let me pause right here. You know, the Europeans are about 15 miles ahead of us on GMOs. Notice that it's the Japanese that say, you put GMO in your alfalfa and you can kiss off exporting any alfalfa to South Korea and Japan. They said that about wheat. They said, you put that GMO wheat out there and you can kiss off exporting any of that crap to us. So, along with that, the Russians, now, they come in and they start planting the open pollinated seed so that they can take over the United States market. Now, the U.S. exports are declining, both in agriculture and in manufactured products, and our imports are climbing, which exacerbates our balance of payments deficit. Boys and girls, this is not good for our country, and you can rest assured that your politicians know that. And both sides of the aisle, the Republicans and the Democrats, have been supporting free trade since Franklin D. Roosevelt funk up the process back in the 1930s. And now, after about 70 or 80 years, the process is now coming back to bite us in the butt. Stand by, there's more to come. Well, a zoologist at a university in Lignano, Italy, examining a nine-year-old dog, discovered a subcutaneous mass confirmed as a high-grade infiltrative fibrosarcoma at the site of a microchip implant. The toxicology department of Bayer Corporation in Stillwell, Kansas, reported tumors surrounding implanting microchip animal identification devices were noted in two separate chronic toxicity oncogenicity studies using 344 rats. Although the incidence rate was only about 1%, most of the affected rats had to be destroyed. Okay, so now we got a number. It affects about 1%. Now, maybe that'll throw a curve into this national ID program. Now, the first thing they want to do here in May of next year is to give you a card. They just want to tell you that, hey, the bottom line to this program here is we're going to give you a card, a national identification. I think most Americans will go down and line up to get their national ID, like they went down and lined up to get their Mark of the Beast. But now, once you go down and you get your national ID, then the next step in the scenario, when you get your card, you know, they'll come along and say, okay, now you got to reapply for this. And the next time, they're not going to give you a card. They're going to give you a microchip. And then you're going to have that thing in your right hand and then in your forehead. And by the time they get down to putting it in your hand, your forehead, see, you'll have to have it in order to pay your rent. You'll have to have it in order to go into a Walmart store. I mean, they'll have some kind of a system over here where you can't go into a federal building without your implanted chip or something on that order. So, and then you'll say, well, gosh, well, I don't want it, but I had to get it because I couldn't get a job or I couldn't go into a federal building or. So. They do it in increments. They don't just come out here and do it all at one time, you know. Social Security, the mark of the beast, they didn't come out here and force every American to get one. They said, we're going to impose this on manufacturing. And the manufacturing companies objected to it, and the Supreme Court upheld it in 1935. Then the next step was, we're going to expand Social Security in 1954 to include farmers. Then we're going to expand it to include these people and that group over there, until finally included everybody. And then in 1964, the Congress said, okay, now we're going to use the Social Security number as your taxpayer identification number. You see, little by little, they just kept putting the camel into the tent until finally they threw you out, and the camel now is occupying the tent. That's what they'll do with this national identification thing. And most of you out there will just be overwhelmed with it, and you won't know what to do about it. So there's that story. Now, pesticides come into play here. This is the Echo update from Acres USA. Let me give them one more plug over here. You can subscribe. It's $27 a year, 12 issues. Let me see how much that is a page, because there's about 90 pages here. Yeah, about 90 pages. If you take 90 pages times 12, and you're talking about 1,080 pages, so let's just round it off to 1,000 pages for $27. $27, that's 2,700 divided by 1,000. 2.7 cents per page. And there's a lot of information for 2.7 cents. I told you about that international forecaster is about 6.5 cents a page. I think that for 6.5 cents, you're going to get a hell of a lot more than you get from the CBS Evening News, and you don't have to sit there and listen to all the ads. You can flip the pages and skip the advertising if you so desire. That address again for the Acres USA story, or the subscription. You go to Acres USA, published 12 months a year, $27 a year, P.O. Box 91299. Why don't you send them a $5 bill? Just send a $5 bill in the envelope and say, send me your latest issue of Acres so I can take a look at it. I think when you do, I think you'll want to subscribe. Their phone number is 512-892-4400. Or you can give them a call here, you know, 512-892-4400. Pesticides in the EPA. Got a thing here that's called Azenfos methyl, called Guthion, or AZM, is a pesticide that's been in use since the late 1950s. Well, the Environmental Protection Agency decided to end its use on nursery stock and Brussels sprouts by October of 2007, on nuts by November of 2009, and on apples, pears, cherries, blueberries, and parsley by October of 2012. All right, let's run over that one again. Do you ever buy Brussels sprouts, nuts, apples, pears, cherries, blueberries, or parsley? Because if you do, this pesticide is on those products. Now somebody's going to say to me, well, you know, we wash everything real carefully in the sink, you know, before we eat it. Boys and girls, do you know that those food crops that you're washing so carefully in your sink take that up into the tissue of the pear, the cherry itself? Were you aware of that? Because if you're not, then let me clue you in. That a certain percentage of these pesticides that you spray onto the plant actually are taken up by the plant itself and then deposited in the tissue of the fruit that you later eat. Now, it's true that what's on the outside you can wash off. You never get it all off. Number one, you never get it all off, but you can wash off most of it. All right, so tuck that one away in your heart. And so the bottom line to this is that you'd be well advised to know that these pesticides that are being sprayed on these crops and that you're buying out of your supermarket and taking home feeding your kids, you're putting those right into your children's body and your husband's body, ladies. Now, there's a solution to that. It's called activated charcoal. I take a little activated charcoal every day just so that I can absorb and then cast out of my body those very pesticides that I'm taking in that I can't get rid of any other way by washing them off in the sink. But I just thought I'd throw that one out for your consideration. Well, it's not good enough for many farm workers and environmentalists. However, they are suing the EPA to force faster elimination of this pesticide, which is claimed to be putting thousands of people at risk for serious illness. Now, the EPA also decided to lengthen the amount of time that workers are forbidden to enter areas treated with another pesticide, Fosmet, and to add various restrictions on 9 other uses of that substance. That's not good enough either. Fosmet has also been added to the lawsuit, as had chlorofyrose, a pesticide used on corn and orchard crops. Now, this corn over here is like, Let me show you how this corn works. And this corn farmer needs to kill these boll weevils, or corn borers, I guess, in corn. And so they spray the crop. All right, the corn plant takes this up, puts it out in the little corn kernels. And then somebody comes along, harvests the corn. Then they grind it up, and they make tacos and tortillas and various other things, and you eat that stuff. Of these 89 or 87,000 chemicals that we have in our society, in our environment, you know, those chemicals over there are causing a lot of cancer and a lot of diseases. Now, you people don't see it that way, and that's because you don't eat an ear of corn, and then the next morning you come down with cancer, go to the doctor, and say, oh, my God, cause and effect, corn causes cancer. It doesn't happen that way. What we have observed since the early 1900s is that the cancer rate, which was 1 in 33 back in 1900, is now 1 in 2. That is, 50% of people breathing right now are going to develop cancer in their lifetime. That's here in the United States, half of us. So we see there's been a tremendous increase in the rate of cancer. At the same time, we see that the use of pesticides and chemicals in 1900 was very low, and today they're very high. And so, you come along and you say, my God, I think that chemicals are causing an increase in cancer. And right away, some guy comes along and says, well, I've been to the university, and that's not proof that the chemicals are causing it. It could be something else. Probably isn't, but it could be something else. Okay, whiz kid, come up with a better idea. What do you think's causing it? Well, we don't know. But that doesn't mean we should stop using chemicals just because the increase in cancer has gone up by 3,300% or 33,000%, or something on that order. And so just as an old farm kid out here, I'm sitting here telling you boys and girls that these chemicals out here, once they're banned, the farmer has to have a different chemical. So the trick here is they go out and they create a new chemical. Then they test that one out here for 10 or 15 years. It's probably more deadly than the one that it replaced. You know, the chemicals used today are more deadly than DDT. But they don't kill the birds, and so they're killing the farm workers that are out there. Farm workers are expendable, but birds aren't, or the environment isn't, or something on that order. The truth of the matter is, those of us that are into eco-agriculture, we don't use any chemicals at all. So this is good news. I see this as good news. I just wanted to point out that it doesn't solve your problem. So if you're living in the city and you think that this ban on these two pesticides, oh, boy, that's really good. No, children, you're missing the point. These two are phased out, and some chemical company's coming in with two more deadly toxic poisons that will be used in the environment for 10 or 15 years until somebody wakes up and says, oh, my God, these are killing three times as many farm workers or three times as many fish or something else as was the old one. Then they'll phase that one out and replace it with something that's even worse. Now, that's the way that game is played. Let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. And if you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school and is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, then please go to the homeschooling page on our website, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. Remember, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. And I should remind you that the sources of information that we use on this program are true, they're accurate and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. That's because most of the authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not endorsed, or not wholly endorsed, I should say, by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. And they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. Again, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, Smithfield phases out crates. Now, this is a practice that goes on in these big animal factory farms. Now, normal people, guys like me, when we're raising livestock, we're not penning our animals up in boxes and crates. But listen to this. In case you didn't know how hogs are raised, on factory hog farms, sows are kept in 2x7-foot metal cages called gestation crates nearly all of their entire lives. Did you know that? Now you just picture this. Here's a box, 2 feet by 7 feet, about the length of a big sow, and 2 feet wide. And then they're just put side by side. And that sow eats, sleeps, and lives in that box all of her life. Never leaves there. What do you think of that? Well, it's just a dumb animal. Now, you talk about cruelty now. I'm telling you. Now, in human beings, we put them in bigger crates. We call them prisons, but we have to have a minimum of 96 square feet. But for a pig, you only have to have 14. 14. Humans have to have 96. Needless to say, the practice has aroused antipathy. Florida voters banned the use of these crates in 2002, as did Arizona voters in 2006. Whole Foods refuses to buy pork from suppliers using gestation crates. And there is a bill before Congress that would forbid the federal government from purchasing pork from such producers. Smithfield Foods has announced that it will phase out this practice over the next decade. And while some tout this development as major progress, others challenge Smithfield's competitors to beat them to the punch by stopping the practice sooner. So just in case you are wondering, how cruel can we be to animals? Smithfield Foods is just one producer, and all the rest of them do it also. And then hemp. You ever heard about hemp? Hemp is the stuff that we make marijuana out of. Or, put another way, marijuana is the stuff we make rope out of. Despite federal resistance, the movement to restore one of America's founding crops continues at the state level. For the 7th time in 9 years, an industrial hemp bill has been introduced in New Hampshire, where House Bill 424 was introduced in January, and the California Industrial Hemp Farming Act was reintroduced in February. Meanwhile, South Carolina became the 28th state to reintroduce a hemp farming bill, where Representative Bill Harbaugh's man noted, this was the, or has the potential to replace a good part of the tobacco growing industry. I just saw a little piece the other day. I saw this and I said, wow, that's kind of interesting. You know, we used to grow hemp in this country, and we stopped. And it's a practice that was replaced by this nylon rope. You know, we don't use hemp. We don't use natural fibers. We use nylon now. But did you know that marijuana is the biggest cash crop grown in the United States? In spite of the fact that it's illegal, I think there's 24 states. I saw a report here the other day. Marijuana growing, not just hemp, you know, for rope. Now, just marijuana, the illegal stuff, is a bigger cash crop than wheat, corn, soybeans, and there's a fourth crop here, probably rapeseed or something like that combined. Take all the corn produced in America, take all the wheat produced in America, take all of the rapeseed and soybeans produced in America by all of those farmers, and then sell it in the marketplace, and they get less money than for the national marijuana crop. Now get this, marijuana is illegal. And if you get caught growing it, you're going to go to prison. They're going to take your land. They're going to take your equipment. And there's more dollars being produced growing marijuana in spite of the fact that it's illegal than the four largest crops grown in the United States. Now that is a tribute to the free marketplace. That's the free market in operation, kids. Now, the government, of course, they call that the black market. They call it the underground economy. Oh, it's wicked and evil. I just wanted to point out. But it works. It works. And where there's a demand for a product, there will be a supply. You can rest assured. Where there's a demand, there will be a supply. No matter the cost, no matter the risk, somebody's going to go out there and produce it and deliver it to those willing buyers. So there you go, kids. Now, oil refinery polluters, 9 of the 10 domestic oil refineries. Now, listen to this. 9 of the 10 domestic oil refineries that emit the most carcinogens produce only 15% of the industry's total oil. So you take all of the oil that's being refined here in the United States, and the 10 domestic oil refineries that emit the most carcinogens produce 15% of the industry's total oil, according to a report by the Environmental Integrity Project, which raises doubts about the accuracy of oil industry reporting to the EPA. So their conclusion is that the oil companies lie to the EPA about the numbers, and that's because it's a self-enforcing process or program. In other words, what's going on here is that, like the pharmaceutical industry, so the pharmaceutical people, they do the tests on this new drug. And so the test on the new drug comes in, and the pharmaceutical industry, you know, they look at it and say, oh my God, this is bad, and so let's doctor up the report that we're going to send to the FDA. So they make out their own report, doctor it up, send it in, the FDA looks at it and says, oh, this looks like a pretty good product, we'll approve it. So they do the same thing. It isn't that you thought that the FDA was testing this drug to find out if it was any good. No. Get that through your head. The industry tests it. Well, the oil industry works the same way. You thought that the EPA was out there testing the atmosphere and protecting you from these pollutants. You got your head up the wrong end of your anatomy here. It's the industry that does the tests. And then they make the report to the EPA, and they say, okay, well, here's how much is out there. Now, here's an independent organization. They come along, and they test it, and they say, well, let's tell you what the bottom line is. Now there's a doomsday seed fall. They got room for one more here. 600 miles north of Norway's northern coast and deep 360 feet in the side of a mountain on Spitsbergen Island, a cavern is being built that will be a depository for all known varieties of food crop seeds. It's called the Svalbard International Seed Vault. It's called the Doomsday Vault by some. It intends to safeguard the world's agriculture from future catastrophes such as nuclear war, asteroid strikes, drastic climate change, and genetic manipulations gone haywire. I underlined genetic manipulations gone haywire. That's coming. Rest assured. Because the boys at Monsanto, one of these days, it's going to get away from them. That's the bottom line. It's going to get away from them. Now, research has conducted, or was conducted, to find the place least likely to be affected by changing temperatures, water levels, earth shifts. It's at a cost of $5 million to the Norwegian government. The vault has built, or was built, to house 3 million seed samples kept at 0 degrees Fahrenheit. Stockpiling will begin in 2008. Kids, I've been advocating that for years. You should have your own stockpile of seeds, open pollinated seeds, and then put them in your own freezer, down to 0 or 10 below. And you keep your own seeds. I know it's a wild new concept. But if the government of, in this case, Norway, thinks that it's prudent for Norwegians, I think it's prudent for you and me. So that's what I've done. I personally have stashed a stockpile of seeds. I have two cans of seeds of about 100 varieties each, and I stuck them into my freezer so that, you know, I've got two independent seed sources. Now, they don't have to be frozen. Seeds keep. They keep for years at room temperature. But the colder you keep them, the longer they'll keep. And you can freeze these seeds and keep them. They'll germinate for up to 20 years. In some cases, 30 or 40 or 50 years. And so anyway, while you're at it, tuck that one away in your heart. Well, we're going to have to leave right about now. I'm watching my clock over here. Let me remind you that you are listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. And the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide on the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Well, there's the signal. Our time is up. We're going to have to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.